love, if you're lucky enough to find it, lasts forever. So do diamonds and even some tattoos. And for trade book authors, there are the contracts they sign with publishers. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. Typical book contracts require authors to transfer rights for the duration of copyright. In the U.S., that term runs for the author's lifetime plus 70 years. In other words, just about forever. Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, agrees with the Authors Guild that something's not quite right about this. He joins me now from New York, and welcome back to Beyond the Book, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
Well, the Authors Guild has been releasing several installments in its so-called Fair Contract Initiative, and the latest one gets to the point that a contract should not be forever. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so this week the Authors Guild released the fourth installment of its Fair Contract Initiative, and I think this installment is a pretty good one, and one that really hasn't gotten the kind of attention and pickup that I think it deserves. And it's about contract terms and the length of contract terms. The latest entry on the Authors Guild blog is called "A Publishing Contract Should Not Be Forever," and that gives you some sense of where they come down on the issue. I'll read you, a sentence from that post that says, "There's no good reason why a book should be held hostage by a publisher for the lifetime of the copyright, the life of the author plus 70 years, which is essentially forever." Yet that's precisely what happens today, the Guild notes. A publisher can go bankrupt or be bought by a conglomerate. The editors who signed up the author may go on to other companies. The sales force may no longer find the wherewithal to sell the title in the marketplace and ignore it. But no matter how badly a book languishes on a publisher's backlist, the author's agreement keeps the book there for many, many decades. And to rectify this, the Authors Guild proposes a three-part change. The first is to have time-limited contracts. Now, I think that makes sense, and this is actually what our friend Richard Nash proposed with his imprint Red Lemonade. He proposed three-year deals, renegotiable after that, and a couple of other houses have followed that, indies have followed that, and that's exactly what the Authors Guild is kind of pushing here, to go for these short deals that can be renewable. The Guild also calls for a clause that would allow for the reversion of unexploited rights to replace the sort of out-of-print clauses that really are not even relevant anymore in the electronic age, because books never go out of print with print-on-demand and other methods of distribution now. And the Guild argues that subsidiary rights an author grants to a publisher should be subject to reversion upon the author's demand if they are not exploited within 18 to 24 months of publication. And that also, I think, makes sense too. If a publisher is not able to execute any of the sub-rights that they have signed up, whether that's a foreign deal or a first serial deal or something, they should give the author a shot. I'm sure that's nothing that's not too controversial. And I think all of these ideas make profoundly good sense. I think they should be negotiated. I think they should be on the table with agents right now, as a matter of fact. And I think that if authors look around, they're going to find that quite a few indie publishers are ready to step up and agree to those terms pretty regularly. But I would also caution that this comes at a price, and that price is advances. As the agent Andrew Wiley is reported to have said, if a book earns out its advance, he hasn't done his job. And that really is the truth in the modern publishing world, because most books simply do not earn out their advances. We know this. But the payments to authors are justified over the lifetime of a book because the copyright is viewed as an asset that helps the valuation of the publishing house. So I'd be careful what the Authors Guild is wishing for here. Do they really want to be paid all up front for a lifetime of a book, like most advances generally seem to do today? Or do they really want to take less money up front and get more freedom on the back end to continuously sell the book? So I'm not sure that the Authors Guild post really hits at the very core of how writers are paid by publishers today, which is, advances that are earned out over the lifetime of a book. But if the Authors Guild wants shorter contracts, I certainly think that is reasonable and makes sense in the digital age, but I would caution that they can also expect smaller advances if that's the case.
Be careful what you wish for. I think that seems to be the moral of the story there. And when it comes to how authors are paid, we learned this week that St. Martin's Press has launched a new romance imprint that is addressing this question. Tell us more.
Yeah, so St. Martin's Press announced this week the launch of Swerve, which is a digital imprint that will feature romance content. It's going to be led by the director of romance and executive editor Monique Patterson. And as you suggest, authors are going to be offered the option of receiving an advance plus standard royalties, or they can opt in for a higher royalty rate with no advance. In other words, they're going to do what Amazon's KDP program already does, except I would note that Amazon probably will pay a higher royalty given in certain circumstances. And also Amazon pays monthly and Swerve is going to pay royalties quarterly. So there was no mention of how long the contracts with Swerve last. I imagine that's something that's probably going to be negotiated from author to author. But nevertheless, I think Swerve is a good example of how the big houses are starting to move forward on their contracts in different ways digitally, especially with genres like romance, where we now know there's a pretty big readership out there.
Indeed. And, you know, speaking of digital books, which we do just about every week on this podcast with you, Andrew, you're off to Cleveland next week for Overdrive's annual Digipalooza program.
That's right. I'm going to eBook Summer Camp. This week, I'll be taking my first trip to Digipalooza, which is the annual user conference that's sponsored by Overdrive, which, of course, is the leading library eBook platform. And that's going to run from August 5th to 7th in Cleveland. And next week, I will be talking to you from a library in Cleveland, if all goes as planned. But, you know, I'm really excited to go to Digipalooza. Now in its fifth year, this is a conference that's really sort of steadily grown in popularity, as Overdrive has grown as well, I might add. And it attracts hundreds of librarians who come for a program that is 100% focused on digital media in public libraries and schools. You look at the program, and the sessions range from nuts and bolts, how to, you know, make the most out of your digital collections, to bigger picture, such as there's a publisher's panel, and there's a closing crystal ball report from Overdrive CEO Steve Potash. So if you're there, you know, please introduce yourself. I'm going to be on a panel on Thursday, August 6th at 9:30 a.m. with ALA President Sari Feldman, who happens to be a former co-chair of the ALA's Digital Content Working Group and is also the director of the Cuyahoga County Public Library there in Ohio. It's a home game for Sari. So I'd love to hear directly from you about your experience with ebooks in libraries, or just come say hello. That'd be nice too. But in Monday's issue, I'm going to offer just a short look at some of the things I'm looking to get out of my Digipalooza experience. Among the issues are experimentation. You know, I really want to know what librarians think about the models that we're using now and whether or not we're sort of doomed to this one copy, one user analog era model forever when it comes to ebooks and libraries, or as the tablet age advances, if we're going to be looking at other options, subscription access and streaming, for example. I also wonder how ebooks are doing in schools. And this question comes on the heels of a report that the New York City schools are about to ink a $30 million deal with Amazon to set up an ebook storefront. And lastly, I wonder how librarians are handling their data. You know, how are librarians using ebook data to get information about their patrons and market their services, if they're doing this at all in many libraries? You know, in the analog world, librarians used to throw away circulation records to sort of safeguard privacy. But I wonder if that really is an option now, because like so many consumer-facing services, data is needed to create innovative new services. So I wonder how libraries are balancing the need to protect patron privacy and also the need to collect and use the data they have to sort of stay competitive with the commercial-facing, commercial reading services that are emerging out there. Of course, I have myriad other questions, which I hope to gain insight into at Digipalooza, and I'll have a full report upon my return, which I am sure we will be talking about here in the coming weeks, and you can also read about it on the Publishers Weekly website.
All right. Well, Andrew, to that great list of questions about libraries, I've got one. Perhaps you can ask it when you get there next
sure.
week. Sure. Can I pay my fines in Bitcoins now?
I'll put that out there. Yeah, I'll see what I can find
out. See what you find out. Andrew Albany, Senior Writer, Publishers Weekly, thanks so much for joining us as you do every Friday on Beyond the Book.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.